You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig, and I have been pumped up by our intro. It always gets me grooving.
You should have seen his little jig, I'll call
it. Was it a jig? I was boogieing.
Either way, jig, boogieing. I was laughing right before I'm supposed to start recording this podcast. So, nonetheless, entertaining. We'll get video for you guys next time, maybe. It'll be interesting, nonetheless. Well, welcome back to another episode. We took a week off. I took a trip to Disneyland, so I was out of here for a couple weeks. And here we are back recording during basketball season. So, with that...
A lot has changed, and then changed back since you left.
Legitimately.
Right? It went, oh my gosh, maybe they're really, really... Oh, nope. They're exactly what we thought they were.
And the news is still crazy, as always. But, hey, let's tell people about something that might be useful, which is Ute Daddy's process. If you're not aware, Ute Daddy on Twitter, go follow him, has a process for lawn care, and he adapts it to anywhere. So if you live out east and are listening to this show, you can use it. If you're in Utah, by all means. California, go for it. But it's a good process, and I've started using it. Joseph's starting this
March. I'm really gonna dive in this year because I bought a house in the middle of last spring. It was kind of a bad time for yard work, and there was so much going on with the house that by the time I got around to it, I barely had time to mow. But this year, I'm going to start the process when it's supposed to be started in March and reap the rewards of a glorious green outdoor space.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to my glorious green outdoor space as well. But
did you hear that iRobot, the company that makes the Roomba, has come out with a lawnmower,
yeah,
which I'm very excited about because I loathe mowing the lawn. Loathe it.
Rit?
Yeah, well, I know a lot of guys really like it.
Your kids to get old enough, but and then they'll do it.
It just doesn't do it for me. I find it dull and thankless work. I like gardening. I like working on the house and building stuff, but mowing the lawn makes me pull my hair out.
All right, well, there will be shed building at the Bagby House this spring. So.
Ooh, I would love to come build a shed. Get my tool belt out, dust it off. It's been a while since I built, but I am a builder.
All right, so what are we talking about today? We're going to go over the schedule. We're going to talk some gymnastics. We're going to talk basketball. And, of course, we're going to talk football. There's been some very exciting projections out there to talk about. So without further ado, we'll go into the schedule. So, shockingly, here we are late February, and the first event on my calendar is February. Is that today? No. It is today, actually. Softball and baseball are getting going, which surprised me.
Yeah, it's kind of wildly early in the year. Especially these days. Oh, wow. That's Grant's computer. So thank you for the musical introduction, Grant.
You're welcome.
I don't know why, because I feel like a lot of students matriculate in the summer these days. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be too much to ask a scholarship athlete to summer and fall semesters instead of spring and fall semesters. Mm-hmm. But they don't. They play all their games in February when it's icy cold. And as a result, every good collegiate baseball and softball team are all down south because they're the only ones that can practice in the actual environments where they can play. And then if you look at the schedules, there's very few home games for teams like Utah in the first part of the schedule because there's snow and you can't play softball when there's snow on the field. And so the first half of the season, they'll be doing a huge road trip across the southern United States, which is terrible for a team. By the time that you get to start playing your home games, you're already at the bottom of your division standings, and you haven't had, you know, you're burned out because you've been traveling so much. It's very unfair. They should really do it in the summer. But
well, either way,
I have opinions. Opinions with a capital O about this.
I'm trying to review the schedule. We don't need to go hot takes here.
No, we need to have a 30-minute segment on softball scheduling in collegiate athletics.
Don't worry, guys. I'll stop. I'll even pull the thing out of his computer so it doesn't happen. But all right, so softball's in Palm Springs, California, and baseball's in San Diego. Pretty nice. Tonight at 7 p.m. is women's basketball against Washington. The ski team is up in Alaska. Let's see here. Track and field's in Seattle. Women's tennis is in Madison, Wisconsin. Let's see here. Where else are we going? Swimming and diving is against USC this weekend. And then, of course, the men's and women's teams also have their matchups against Washington State. So, pretty busy time, as always, in Utah athletics. They definitely don't slow down up there, except during the summer, which is apparently to Joseph's chagrin. But
very irritated. I'm mad online. Well, right now I'm mad in a library, but when we post this, I will be mad online.
Okay. Well, the other big event is gymnastics tomorrow. I believe it's at 1 p.m. It's going to be the Utes versus defending national champs UCLA.
Yeah, this is a top five gymnastics matchup up on the hill. It's an opportunity to see the absolute best that collegiate gymnastics has to offer. And if you have some time, you should go. You may remember some of the UCLA routines were going viral a few weeks ago. And we've had some drama recently on the Twitter box with Michaela Skinner, which we'll get to. Yeah, the Gym Turnette has gone mad. You know, the Gym Turnette, which is the sort of tongue-in-cheek word for the gymnastics fans on the internet.
On Twitter,
and they are a small but loud and passionate group. And they universally despise Michaela Skinner. It has something to do with the way that she celebrates, and sort of she has a very, if you haven't watched her, she has a very competitive attitude as she's competing, which is what gymnastics is, the competition. So I don't think it's a bad thing to be competitive, but the Gym Turnette does. And, you know, she'll pump her fist and she'll cheer when she does well in a way that the Gym Turnette finds unseemly. And they judge and dislike her for that, which is also why she's never won Gymnast of the Year, despite being head and shoulders above, which isn't hard. They're all 4'11", but head and shoulders above. I couldn't not do it. Head and shoulders above the competition at the conference. And also, curiously, this year, relevant to our next talking point here, she hasn't received a 10.0 from both judges yet, despite when you gymnastics scoring is something that you can go back and look at the tape and like figure out, right, and get correct.
Right.
There's a right answer. It's a very specific way that it is handled. You start with a 10. You do the most difficult. If you do the most difficult thing, you start with a 10. Sometimes you might start with a lower top score. And then you have deductions for things like bent knees and crooked toes. Like, I don't know what they all are. But there's deductions,
looking
point
weird.
Deductions for your things. And so you can go watch the film and you can see, well, Michaela didn't do any of the things that are deductions. And she did a 10-point trick.
Yep.
So she should get a 10, but she doesn't because the judges don't like her and they find some little nitpicky thing to dock her down. And so Michaela took to Twitter and what did she say?
So this is what she said. She said, "So far this season, I've stuck five double fools without both judges giving me a 10. Stay tuned for our meet versus UCLA on Saturday and see if we can make it sick."
She is so feisty. I just adore how like savage she is. She's so great.
Well, the thing is like of all teams for it definitely to happen, like to make it six, it's totally going to be against UCLA.
Right.
I mean, sorry, I'm sure a lot of our listeners
The UCLA floor lady will get a 10 because she's sassy.
Right.
And then Michaela will be perfect and get a 9.9 because that's how it works.
Yeah. And so it's just – it's interesting the different things that have happened, right? Because UCLA even had a was it last year? They had a beam routine where the girl almost – like fell off.
Yeah.
And
she still got like a 9.9.
A 9.9 yeah. from one of the judges.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Are we watching the same event?
But oh, the other thing that listeners should know about the Jim Turnette is they don't like Utah fans either.
No.
You know that we pack the Huntsman, right? We have absolutely the loudest, rowdiest, most crowded and intense fans. And it drives them nuts. They think that we should be like nicer and quieter. I don't know if it's like a golf.
Shouldn't be cheering.
It's like a golf club. Yeah. If that's what they're after. I don't know. But anyway, show up and get loud and make the Jim Turnette mad because that's a good thing. And yeah.
Yeah. That's so the other thing, just real quick, I know all of you love hearing us talk about gymnastics, but Jeff Dart tried to make it on Twitter, tried to make it a little bit more understandable.
Oh, yeah, I like this. I like this.
And so he went. He said that if you were to put this line into football translation, it would be Utah as a underdog, like a 5-point underdog at home in translating from gymnastics to football. And then Matthew Jacks, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name, but his translation was that it's like Georgia hosting Alabama is a 5-dog underdog against Bama. So I don't know. It should be a good one. Nonetheless, if you didn't know, UCLA, Utah, you got the Jim Turnette that Joseph just informed you all. It's kind of a rivalry. It's going to be loud tomorrow. I expect it will. I will be there.
And it's just going to be really high quality. Like UCLA is really, really good. And they're fun to watch because they're really, really good. And yep. Getting to see two excellent competitive groups at the same place at the same time. I mean, because gymnastics, you know, it's not – there isn't a contest in the sense of one team trying to obstruct the other. So there's only upside when the opponent is really good because it just means you have more really good gymnasts to watch. Yeah. You know, you don't have to worry about the quarterback getting blown up by the first round NFL defensive end because nobody's tackling anybody and it's just – more fun because they're better.
Yeah. No, for sure. So let's move on. Let's talk some basketball, shall we? We'll save the football for last.
Make you wait.
That's right.
You know that's what you want.
Listen through it.
So you got to listen to us talk about basketball, which is also really – I don't know. It has – since our attitude adjustment, I've had a lot of fun with this season.
Good. So it's been an interesting season, especially since Pac-12 play went – or started, right? So they have been doing like this 4-3 game win streak and then lose two. And so they're going to win again and start the next 3-4 game win streak Saturday.
As long as they start a 3-4 game win streak right before the tournament, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's interesting. So they lost the last one against Washington. That was kind of that was a bigger loss than you'd like on the road. They lost to Arizona State at home. I mean, Arizona State couldn't miss a shot. So, like, that's a tough loss. But the Washington loss to me indicated and it showed me how important Timmy Allen has become for this Utah team.
Yeah, he's really developed into a linchpin.
Yeah, and I really hope he can develop an outside shot. That's like the next level of his game. But just to give you an idea of some advanced stats, his offensive rating in conference play is the highest of anyone on the team. And it's kind of crazy, honestly. It's at 125, so that's pretty high. And his player efficiency rating is at 22 and is the highest on the team. So he's really important offensively to what this team does. And even defensively, he's the second best defensive player on the team. So all of a sudden you took his defensive abilities out of the game and his offensive ability. And something I've really noticed watching the last few games is how much the Utes are trying to, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of copying the Utah Jazz. They're trying to create, in essence, a blunder, right? They pass it around on the outside a lot, and then a guy dives into the lane to try to create something. And typically what happens is the defense will collapse, and you'll either have like a backside cut or an open three-point shooter. Parker Van Dyke, thank you very much. And but if you don't have the guys...
I was so sad that you weren't here to talk about that.
Dude.
I was like, why is it Grant here for this one?
What he's done this season in general, but especially since Pac-12, the meat of Pac-12 play right now, he has just been on fire. And you know what? I'm happy for him. More than anything,
it's so great because he's really had his struggles, but been a tried and true Ute forever.
Yeah,
just always been. And so to see him have so much success and that shot against UCLA, I mean, that's the kind of shot that even this right. This is the end of his basketball career.
Well, he might get some time elsewhere if he really wants to play more.
Yeah, he could probably play, like overseas. Yeah. Overseas. But I mean, this is let's say this is the peak of his of his basketball career, and that moment he'll have forever. That's the kind of thing that you show your grandkids video of. I mean, that is just an absolute Utah classic and never goes away. And given that he's given so much of himself to the program, for him to have the opportunity to make that play is just awesome. And I'm, you know, hooray. Happy for the kid.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, though, is I realized as they're trying to drive the lane, right, to establish their offense, to get the defense to collapse and then move the ball around. The problem with that is I feel like Timmy Allen's the only one that, like, really just dives straight in there. And if he has a shot, he's going to take it and probably draw a foul, which he does all the time, or he'll make the pass. He makes good passes. I feel like most of the team, though, like, we'll dive into that free throw lane area and then are like, never mind, and kick it out too early.
They're diving in looking to create something for somebody else rather than sort of authentically trying to create for themselves, which defeats the purpose, right?
Right.
If you have to be intense about it, you have to be intentional about trying to get to the basket, or you're not going to create the break in the defense that the rest of the team needs, because they don't actually need to collapse or defend you
exactly
with the same intensity that they would if you were really trying to score.
Right.
So you got to really go for it, which is I think a lot of that is youth and physicality. Like
it's physicality.
Like the players aren't physically necessarily ready to kind of.
Well, I mean. I don't know.
Maybe that's too kind. Maybe it has more to do with mindset.
Yeah, I think it's more mindset than anything. I mean, they're all capable of doing it. I mean, look, they get into the lane. I mean, Bearfield gets into the lane. They all get into the lane, but then it generates nothing. And it that's what I saw against Washington. And hopefully Mr. Allen's recuperating and is ready to get back soon from his back injury. But if anything, especially this loss against Washington, that's what was highlighted to me, was how much his aggressiveness and ability to get to the hoop can actually benefit things.
Now perhaps it'll be more clear to the other players when they see the film and see the differences.
Yeah.
What they need to do differently. And that can be a hard lesson to learn when you're working really hard and do really well generally and win a lot of basketball games, to see what you're not doing right can be difficult, and that maybe have a clarifying effect for them.
Yeah, hopefully. But nonetheless, look, this season's going well. They're looking at trying to get a bye. You're exactly right, Joseph. The moment we adjusted our expectations, the season got a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm keeping my expectations low. I think the goal is definitely that first round bye. They're probably an NIT team is my hope. And we'll see what happens. But But on to the thing everyone's really wanting us to hear about, talk about, which is the football.
Football!
So,
yeah.
What do you got for us, Joseph?
Well, I did a we talked a little bit about signing day a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was a solo show and short, and so I guess I'll just kind of dive into it. I won't go player by player like I did a couple weeks ago. You can certainly listen to that if you want that. But I would say it was we talked about at the end of the early signing period, it was a really good kind of core building class, but they needed to add some sort of pizzazz, high talent, high ceiling players to finish it, right? So there were a ton of guys who, well, he's going to be a good defensive tackler. I like him at guard, but where was the big time running back, the big time quarterback? Where were the big time players going to come from? And there weren't really any of those during the early signing period. And then the Utes, of course, lost out on, and now I can't even remember his name. That's how fast I forget these recruits.
Nakua.
No, with Nakua, we didn't expect.
Right.
But we lost out on Jaden Daniels, the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
And then suddenly there was this void to be filled. But in the Cam Rising commitment, which is a 4-star quarterback transferring from Texas to Utah, widely considered sort of nationally to be one of the premier, not the most premier, that would be Jalen Hurts or the kid from Georgia that wound up at Washington. But one of the most premier transfer opportunities at quarterback, and Utah landed Cam Rising, so that's great. And then the running back was a huge, huge get. This was a 4-star running back who had been committed to USC. USC lost that commitment.
Yeah, Wilmore, right?
Wilmore. And at the last second, it started to look like he was going to go to ASU, but credit really owed to Robert Blecken, who kind of strategized this whole thing with phone calls from various people in the NFL and his old coaches and all of these different contacts that were made in the closing hours that flipped Wilmore. Literally 2 hours before he signed, he switched from ASU to Utah. So a huge, huge win for the Utes. This is an elite level running back prospect, on the level with Utah's best running back prospects. But again, Utes are starting to get these running back prospects as freshmen rather than as JUCO transfers, right? That John White was a JUCO transfer and Joe Williams was a JUCO transfer. Zach Moss, true freshman. TJ Green came in as a freshman, who's a 4-star recruit. This is now the third year in a row Utah has landed a elite level, super high ceiling, all Pac-12 caliber talent at running back. So that's exciting.
What star rating was Zach Moss? Do you remember?
Zach was upgraded to 4 right at the end of the recruiting cycle. Once the way recruiting works, right? Once the SEC teams started to circle, right? He got an offer from Miami, and then Tennessee pushed for him really hard. And once those Southeastern teams started to offer him, they bumped him from a 3 to a 4.
Okay. I was just curious.
And I think he was 4 on 24/7 the whole time, and Rivals bumped up toward the end. It sets us 4-star.
I was just curious. I thought he was a 3-star, but
and he was for most of the year. You see this in a lot of sports where people will evaluate a bigger difference between 5.7, which is a 3-star recruit for Rivals, and 5.8, which is a 4-star recruit for Rivals, than they will between 5.6 and 5.7 and 5.8 and 5.9, if that makes sense. Because they flip from 3 to 4 stars at 5.8, people think it makes a bigger difference than it does. But a 5.7 player is every bit as high of a recruit with just a tiny margin for error as a low 4-star recruit.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, I don't know if you were going to say anything else about the recruiting class.
No, I mean, we went
I'll
from
do my PSA.
We went from sort
want.
Of what the heck are we going to do? Where's the big talent? To oh, here we go. And it wound up being a really solid class. Puka Nacua would have put it way over the top. I mean, it would have been a sort of legendary class with that kid. But that was just, we talked about this, that was just a kid who was never going to stay home.
Yeah.
And he gave it an extra couple of days to talk it over with his family and explain to them that, look, that's not what I want. And you know what? You remember that tweet his brother got in trouble for a couple of years ago where he was like, oh, yeah, Puka's gone to way bigger things than Utah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
This is what Samson said. And everybody got really ticked about it. But I bet that was Samson's attitude as well. I bet if he was getting offers from USC and UW, he would have left. And a lot of kids do. Most kids do. The majority of youths leave their home state. And that's not just true for non-blue chip states. 60% of California kids, 65% of Alabama kids, that's the state of Alabama, do not go to Alabama even if they have an offer. So kids,
or LSU.
Yeah, kids leave home. That's just what they do. And the adjustment that needs to be made from fans is not to expect them to stay. And the adjustment that needs to be made from coaches, frankly, is to stop recruiting them so hard. They use huge amounts of resources on these in-state kids when they'll tell you, I really don't want to stay home with my family. Okay, then move on and find a four-star wide receiver in California who doesn't want to stay home.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I will just make my PSA announcement.
And it's a good one.
Hey, guys, it's just recruiting. These are kids making decisions. This is not an indicator of how good they'll even be. I will point out, I could go research and point out plenty of 2-3-star kids who have turned out being studs because of this coaching staff. And ultimately, it's about who plays for the U and plays in Rice-Eccles. So those kids are the kids we cheer for, we support. We don't need to say anything. Like, no one needs to go say something to Puka Nacua now. Like, let the kid go have his career. We'll beat Washington in the Rose Bowl.
You just look ridiculous.
Yeah.
We won't be Washington in the Rose Bowl.
In the Pac-12 championship game. Excuse me.
But yeah, you honestly look like a fool, especially if you're a grown man. Like, if you're 40 years old and you've got a job and a wife and kids, what the heck are you doing tweeting at some 17-year-old for where he's going to college? You're just a dummy and quit.
Yeah, like, seriously, go find something else to do with your life. Go spend some time with that family.
Yeah, or donate some time to go volunteer. You know, like, do something else.
Yeah, do something. Nonetheless, it's pretty crazy. But that's the statement. The other news that you teased earlier is that Brett McMurphy is calling a Utah versus Ohio State Rose Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not just Brett McMurphy. S&P Plus has them at 17. I don't think FBI has come out yet, but I saw another advanced metric had them at 11. I've seen human pollsters with the Utah Utes in the top 10, pre-freaking season top 10. And I don't think that they'll be top 10 in the AP, but they're going to be top 20 in the AP before they've played it down.
Right.
And that's crazy. Guys, I mean, I want you to cast your mind back to 2007 and 2008 when you knew the team was good and everybody just said, Utah, who? And then they would go undefeated and beat a bunch of good teams along the way. And everybody said, well, should they even really be in the top 10? I mean, who have they played? And now Utah is starting in the top 10, which means that Utah has reached a point where if they perform at their highest possible level, they are permitted entry into the gilded halls of college football, which is extraordinary. And they still have a ton of work to do to get there. And they're still not a de facto invitee the way that Oklahoma or Ohio State or LSU is. But what Kyle Whittingham and Chris Hill have done is just incredible. And it's so exciting to be top dog in the West.
Yeah, but how will they handle the top dog position? I mean, that's a different mentality where if there's one thing I know about being a Utah fan and one thing about these teams is they've always thrived.
They love the chip on the shoulder, yeah. The underdog thing. I mean, you hear it constantly. Nobody believed in us. Nobody believed in us. But you know who else I heard that from this year, the January and February? The freaking New England Patriots and Alabama Crimson Tide players would say, yeah, nobody thought we could do this. And it's like, you have been ranked number one since, like, I rolled out of bed 12 years ago. What are you talking about?
Well, Alabama didn't do it.
But the underdog mentality is something that you build within the program. And it's not something that comes from outside. And I think that Kyle Whittingham has created this sense of – because I guess the reason the underdog mentality works is because the message in there is nobody is going to give it to you. You have to go take it.
Yeah.
And that's Kyle Whittingham that breeds that mentality in the Utah football team. I don't think it's the fact that Brett McMurphy ranks them 24th. Or, you know, they're also receiving votes in the preseason. It's in the blood and bone of the program at this point. They won't give it to you. You have to take it because Utah has been taking it over and over and over and over again for the last decade, right? You know, that's the only way they have ever gotten anything is by grabbing on to the opponent and just crushing them, right? Just that pure physical, almost brutality. And it's informed the way they play football, but it's also informed the way they practice and the way they prepare and the way they think about their place. And I don't think that changes just because somebody noticed how good they are. I think it's just too deep in their DNA at this point to get lost because people are expecting great things this time.
Well, my argument to say why I'm not concerned about it is you don't have guys like Zach Moss and Bradley and Nye and all these other guys come back saying we got something else we want and then have this, hey, I'm almighty, and then have them lose a game they shouldn't. That's a mindset and desire that will lead this team and hopefully lead them to plenty of wins. I mean, when you're talking a team that's going to start out ranked that high and is expected to get to a Rose Bowl, like, this is a team that has a shot at more if they prove themselves.
Yes, this is a team. I mean, if you're projected to a Rose Bowl at the beginning of the season and you don't lose any of the football games you play, you're going to get a crack at the playoff.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's not true for everybody, right? It's not always the case that you can get there, even undefeated, even Power Five. It's not always true, I don't think, because the recent direction of the playoff committee has been really have and have nots. And if you're a have not, it's just really tough sledding. But Utah has been that's what they've been given kind of this ticket to enter if they earn it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. But that in itself is an extraordinary opportunity. And I hope that they are fortunate and skilled and prepared enough to take advantage of it, because who knows the next time you get that ticket.
Well, excuse me, it's going to be every year.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Even,
well, I'm joking,
even, I know obviously. You are. I know you are, but I don't think the fan is realizing that even with this coach, even with this DNA, even with the direction of the recruiting, even with the great budget, even with the great fans, this moment is still once in a decade. And if you don't capitalize on it, if you don't take the opportunity to say we have juniors and seniors
everywhere. We are absolutely loaded. We have great coaches. We have plans in place. We have a soft schedule. If you don't take advantage of it, you're toast. But if you do, if this is the year that Utah wins 11 or 12 regular season games and a Pac-12 championship and goes to the playoff, they never take you out of the hall again.
Right.
Right? Once you're in, you're in. You're locked in. You have earned a permanent place at that new higher table. And so
it's like going from the kid table at Thanksgiving to the adult table.
Right. But what you can't do when you go to the adult table at Thanksgiving is get food all over the tablecloth.
Right.
Right? And make a mess and throw a fit and fall asleep in your onion soup. And so a great example is the Ducks, right? The Chip Kelly Ducks were elevating and elevating and elevating, and maybe this is going to be the new big team. And then they got to the national championship game, and they got housed, right? They got laughed out, and they're gone. They've never been invited back, and they have to rebuild that sense of entitlement from scratch and then take advantage of it to get back. And even though they've got a great brand and they recruit well, they're not in that group. And it's because they didn't capitalize on that opportunity and maybe didn't realize that no matter how good your coaching is, no matter how much money you have, unless you already are one of those teams, becoming one of them is a once in a decade or even less, once in a generation opportunity. And I just hope to heck Utah takes advantage this time.
Which, speaking of how good they're projected to be, made me think of another subject, and maybe we need to get into it another time, but is that of season ticket renewals went out recently, and I've heard a bunch of talk about ticket prices and Crimson Club donations, and I know we're not season ticket holders ourselves.
I'm not a season ticket holder because I can't afford to be. I was when they were in the Mad West, and then I had to stop because I couldn't afford it.
Right. Okay. And, same here.
Yeah. And you know what? That's awesome. Are you kidding me? I watch on TV. I bust my butt for Rivals, and I get to go watch a couple games for the press box every year. And the only teams that do not raise their ticket prices every year are shitty teams that lose games and can't sell tickets, right? The teams cutting their – you want to know who's cutting their ticket prices? BYU. Do you want to be BYU or do you want to be USC? I mean, come on. Does it suck? Yeah. But the television experience for college football is awesome now. Every single game is televised. It's all in HD. It's all gorgeous. The announcing sometimes sucks, but mute the game and listen to Bill on the radio. It's fine. And, you know, get over it. And, you know, hopefully someday I will be able to afford season tickets because I would like to, you know, buy my way back in. But I'd rather have a team that wins 9, 10, 11 games every year.
Yeah, no, I knew our takes would be similar in the sense that, look, it's supply and demand. It's a very easy equation. Is if you don't renew your seats, someone else is going to buy them, and they will have those tickets. And that process will continue until all of a sudden, supposedly, the Utah Athletics program has maxed that price out and the market out to where there's not someone who says, yeah, you've raised it so high, I'm not going to buy, and the next guy behind me is not going to buy. Like, until that happens, they're going to keep raising those prices, and I just don't see that happening, just like you said. This football team's too good, and the product on the field is worth the money, and like yourself, I choose not to afford to have season tickets. It's not in the budget.
You went to Disneyland instead. And you know what? I probably also will go to Disneyland this year because that's, you know, that's how I want to spend that discretionary income. And that's, you know, that's life. And
exactly.
So capitalist society.
Exactly. And so that's the choice. Your choice. Like Joseph, I choose to sit in my warm home watching on HD with very clear internet access for all social media fun. And I have a good time.
And that's what I do as well, except I turn off social media because you all drive me nuts on Twitter during the games. And so I just turn all the computers off and watch the game. And then I get out afterwards and we talk about the game.
All right. Well, with that good note of higher season ticket cost and a projected to be very good Utah
Rose Bowl team, projected Utes,
we will say go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to UTalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at UTalk Podcast or email at UTalk@gmail.com.